Hello and welcome to another episode of Matinee Mondays here on the Remnants of Reese's Remember All. Today we're doing an older episode. This is one of the episodes that was mentioned in the channel trailer, so take some time, sit back, relax, and please remember, all of the socials are outdated, and enjoy.
Episode of Robert's Reviews. Last week we took on the 2009 film Avatar just in time for its anniversary of release, and this week we are taking on The Limehouse Golem, a 2017 thriller, horror, and mystery film. It is rated, not rated, but I am going to go ahead and throw on the R rating simply because it is a little bit gory, and at times it's gory for gory's sake. So, violence and blood for the sake of violence and blood. But it still somehow all fits within the range and purview of the story and the film. So, there's that. The Limehouse Golem has a runtime of 1 hour and 49 minutes, or 109 minutes. This movie clocking in at just under 2 hours is one that had me riveted. I spent most of that time keeping an eye on the screen because it is a mystery crime film, so therefore the tiniest little details can spark the realization of who the killer is, why the killer did what they did, and tip you off to just exactly what it is that goes through the mind of the Prime Inspector, the one who does all of the sleuthing. This movie has a budget unknown and had a return of $2.3 million. This movie was also directed by James Carlos Mending, written by Jane Goldman, based on the novel by Peter Aykroyd, and the music was composed by Johan Soderquist. And I probably said that wrong, as I usually do with strange names like that. The Limehouse Golem stars Douglas Booth as Dan Leno, Olivia Cooke as Lizzie Cree, Sam Reed took up the role of John Cree, Maria Valverde as Aveline Ortega, Daniel Mays in the role of George Flood, Bill Nye as John Kildare, and Peter Sullivan as Inspector Roberts. Now, my preliminary thoughts on this one, because I did see it up on Hulu. I almost said Netflix, but this was up on Hulu. I believe it is still up there, available for streaming. It is one that I saw. I was like, okay, this is going to be a bit cheesy, kind of in the vein of Sherlock Holmes, and I was right. Now, the thing that I wasn't exactly counting on was the Penny Dreadful feel. Now, if you haven't seen that series, do look into it. It's all streaming on Netflix. I haven't seen it up on Hulu or Amazon Prime yet. Right now, it is up on Vudu. I'm not sure if it's part of any of their current deals over there. I really do highly recommend Penny Dreadful if you like that steampunk, Victorian era horror thriller genre. If you're a fan of that genre, Penny Dreadful is right up your lane. And pretty much so will this. I mean, the Limehouse Golem, it is definitely interesting. It's different. I did see several reviews that were very negative of like, oh, I figured it out in the first 10 minutes, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that's nice. okay, you figured it out, big whoop, you know. You're prizing figuring it out and how easy it is to figure it out rather than the ride. Go for a ride. Enjoy the film. Let it take you through the emotions. Let it take you through the emotions that it's going to bring to you. Let it run you through everything that it's going to run you through. Follow it. Don't try and figure it all out, because then you're never going to be happy. It's one of the lessons I had to learn along the way. Now, some of them, it's like, okay, you just made that far too easy. Like, hey, really? Okay, so one of the other reasons why I really did kind of pick up into this film is because Bill Nye is absolutely amazing. Dude has done some great work, okay? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Underworld. Let's see, he was also in the... crud. It's not that I forgot this, it's just that I keep forgetting which order this title goes in. I think it's the Marigold Hotel series with Judi Dench. He's in both of them, and it's really good. Both of them are. The first one hits home a lot harder than the second one, because the second one is just a little bit lighter. But anyway, sidetracking done. He pretty much was like the main and only reason that I picked this up. And Clara Oswald from Doctor Who has a lookalike in the movie, and I had to look that up. So I'm watching through the trailer, and I thought I saw her, you know, come around a corner, and I'm like, wait, was that? So I had to look it up. No, it wasn't her. It wasn't her. But if you want to sit there and just torture yourself a little bit, go for it. Really. The Limehouse Golem also leans into the Jack the Ripper entire motif and feel. It's very much so one of those films that right from the get-go, it hits you with that. I kind of liked it, but it also kind of annoyed me. And I just want to say this right off the bat as we get into, like, my notes, like the official notes on the movie to start with. Bill is a not top build, and he's, like, the main guy. You see all of this pretty much from his perspective. You're following him as he's uncovering all of this right up until, like, the last little bit where it goes back and forth, like, He's your main, okay? Everyone else is just kind of supplementary. So, I call travesty. Events seem to be told from the perspective of a play. Like, it's all very played out, if you'll forgive the inadvertent pun. That's not so much a bad thing. It really isn't. It takes a moment to get used to, because the stage features heavily in this. It's gonna be a thing, so strap in now or get off before it takes off too much further. Even madness has logic. This has none. That line echoes so much throughout this entire movie that it is really, really insane. But also, it makes sense for this. Like, if you've seen it, you know why. If you haven't seen it yet, and when you go to watch it, you'll understand why. Kildare, he's navigating the mystery. And that's pretty much, like I said, that's pretty much how things unfold for us, the viewers. There's the rumors early on that are discussed that Kildare is a man in a certain way. Okay, that's old-timey talk, or presumed old-timey talk, for dude, you're gay, and the only reason why you're still around here is because you're good at your job and you did some really good work back in the day, so we're gonna overlook the fact that you're a little twinkle toes and let you keep going on, which is complete BS, because, like, that isn't really touched upon again throughout the entire movie. Like, if it was a point to bring up, I could get that. I could get behind it. If there was a relationship that happened, I could understand bringing that up. But there isn't one. It was just a point of being brought up to bring it up, which is in some cases could border on queer baiting, but in other areas, it's just like, why bring it up at all? Why mention it at all? Because it doesn't play into, pointless facts about characters that have no relevance just kind of irk me sometimes. And this one just seemed like it was pandering, or, you know, that's at the best, which was pandering. And at the very worst, it's a bit of a slap in the face and baiting to the community, which is just, it's a problem already. So there, the Council of Geeks over on YouTube has several videos on this subject, which I have spoken up on those videos already. So I'm not going to revoice that here. So if you want to go over there and watch those videos, go for it. But yeah, I'm going to end that here. Now, one of the things to realize, the CGI is clearly CGI. They didn't really have the budget, I'm guessing, in order to be able to make that look less like CGI, which is fine. And I mean, and that's fine. Getting access to the London Victorian era set is probably very difficult and very costly. So this was probably just one of those ways where they were able to have the set that they wanted and be able to do what they needed to do. You know, it all makes sense. It's fine. I mean, suspend your disbelief. That's kind of what we're here for. We're here for the story and the plot. And, you know, everything else is secondary. And it adds up, but it's not the main thing. That was what Fantasia was for. The trailer and the earlier portions of the movie made Bill out to be, like, the lead. And to me, he still is the lead. He's the lead guy. Olivia Cooke is the leading lady. It kind of revolves around these two playing some weird intricate chess game that they're both aware of yet not aware of at the same time. Like, it's so weird. Like, you'll figure it all out. And Eddie Marson as Uncle was really cool. I do enjoy Eddie when he pops up in random places. Like, that was really cool to see. And yeah, it had the weird vibe, which I'm really a fan of in these movies, because you've always got to have that one character that's just a little weird. You know, the way Bill Nye talks is just so great. And that's not like anything negative. That's not a mockery or anything. I genuinely enjoy listening to him give a performance. Just him talking in general is great. So I'm going to be going and looking for audiobooks with his narration and his reading of them. I hope he's done some, because this is just great. His line, "The golem is still at large. Wasting my time could cost lives." The way he delivers that, it's angry and full of compassion. Like, he's good at that. Like, that anger with that tender care right there, like the two perfectly blended, where he's trying to reach out but also let you know you done screwed up. That's so good. I like that, because the human experience is a blend of emotions. You're not just angry and then the next sentence is happy-go-lucky. Like, that's not the standard human existence. Like, when you're having it out like this, I like seeing the layers of a performance, and he really delivers on that. Now, one of the complaints that I do have is that he is quiet. However, that, from what I'm told, is also a very British thing. Some people that I worked with in theater have said that when they were abroad in England for their study and for some work that they had, was that they are very quiet. And they like to keep things quieter. No need to run around screaming all the time. No need to be yelling and shouting and screaming at the top of your lungs. There's no need for it. So everything is a little more subdued. And I'm, on one hand, okay. And on the other hand, it's like, right. But I don't know. I've never been there. So now, Mr. Flood, George Flood, It'll be very obvious from the get-go that he's one of those. Whereas the rumors have been lodged against Kildare, it's a fact with Flood. And it's kind of obvious, but no one thinks about that unless you've been caught. So, he hasn't been caught yet to have his life ruined, or people just don't care. Either way, Now, I did find that the journal transitions to be quite interesting. I found them entertaining. Douglas Booth in this film, Freddie Mercury. Freddie Mercury. I'm sorry, it's... He could take on a modern freaking look-alike contest for Freddie and win. It's weird. Now, one of the other things that kind of pick up is the green tones and how dingy everything is. It's like main themes of mood and color for this film, and it's all visually done. Like, they don't acknowledge the dinge or the heavy green tint, but it's all there. And there's times where it also kind of picks up on a Sweeney Todd feel. It's all very strange the way that this is done, because it starts off in one way and it starts incorporating elements of like everything else, which is weird but also kind of cool. And I found it to be as a bit of a love letter to that era and genre of storytelling, which it can work or not. And for me, this worked. The last half of the film will definitely draw you in. Well, I mean, it did for me, but I just wanted to go and enjoy the journey and sit back and relax. So that's what I allowed to happen for me, is I just allowed it to take me where it was going to take me. Though the journal entries can give it all away, the cover-up that two characters dress in drag is quite helpful to throw it all off. So if you've seen it, you understand that one. If you haven't, and you don't want spoilers, too late. I mean, you're in the wrong show. The fact that two of the characters do dress in drag helps confuse things a little bit, because you're like, okay, which one? And for me, part of the time, I wasn't even thinking about that. Like, it, for whatever reason, it didn't click in my head that it could have been one of them dressing the other way to make it seem. So it was just like, really? Like, what? Are we sure? It was a lot of weird, random toss-outs of confusion. So it did serve its job if you were just letting it take you where it was going to take you. If you were trying to figure it out, there were some hints that I can't believe I missed, and I feel a little sad that I missed a couple of them, but they weren't the big ones, which I did pick up on. Mrs. Cree, Little Miss Lizzie. I don't think that she should have been her mother's killer. I don't. It was, unless all of the killings were against those who had assaulted her or had anything to do with her assaults. So that being said, that was a problem for me, that it kind of just seemed, you know, to be by her whimsy, which would have made a bit more sense. And I guess that's part of the psychology of what makes a sociopath or a psychopath. You could argue that she could fall into either side. So her killing could have been a little bit more Joker-esque rather than an explosive moment of anger that she just kind of goes, oh well, and moves on. Kind of works, kind of doesn't, but hey, I guess it's time to go read the book. This is one that I really liked. This was a point that I thoroughly enjoyed. Kildare not releasing her or outing her as the killer was a smooth move. To deny her the fame she so desperately demanded. She wanted fame and acclaim, and I guess it was one of those things for her killing, is she wanted what she wanted, and screw you if you got in her way. She might even kill you if you tried to stop her. And I mean, that's so, such a trivial way of being basically a serial killer. Like, she should have had a bit more of a thing, you know? I kind of like when they have a thing in stories, because then it's not that it makes it easier for the reader to follow. It's more that it gives them an added layer of depth when they're like the unhinged evil one in the story, the bad guy, or in this case, the evil lady who just does what she does. But I don't know, I guess the villains for me, I like them to have a little something. And for her, I guess one could make the claim that it was drag, but I don't know. I mean, a rewatch with a couple of friends who like this genre and talking about it would be really good. I guess that's the next thing on my list to do after finding Bill Nye audiobooks. One of the things that they threw in there at the end that had me going, was this needed? Uncle, he knew of her secret, and that whole thing with Uncle, I needed more. I needed more on that. That should have been a little bit more of a thing. Like, he knew her secrets. He knew a lot of people's secrets, and that was strange to me. And it was odd. And it was another one of those things that felt like, oh, let's add this in there and give this character a little bit more depth and give a real reason and just make this scene seem bad, because he was a bit of a kingster and whatnot in those days. It was very taboo. And so his way of fulfilling his desires and his needs was to force others into it through blackmail. So yeah, let's paint another community as bad and paint another community that needs to be shamed. Great. I get it. It's a period piece. I just think that whole thing either needed a little bit more time and explanation, or to just be cut and made something else entirely. Like, he figured it out because he was a very intelligent man and he was a threat. Rather than making out all of these people in her life to be skeezy and make her seem like the poor innocent victim standing up for her rights and the patriarchy needs to be put down kind of situation, because then it just kind of makes it seem like that old trope of women aren't able to actually like be psychotic evil killers. They have to be pushed to it. They have to suffer trauma in order for that to happen, which is not the case at all. Anyone can be a psychotic killer. You just are or you're not. I guess that's how that works. On the list of odd things, Karl Marx makes an appearance as a character in the movie. I don't get that one, but it is what it is, and I'm just going to skip right over that because that was confusing as crap. Eveline used the play to commit suicide in front of a live audience, which can leave the viewers of the film thinking that this was part of the Golem's plan. However, clearly, it was not. Now, yeah, I know, I just went ahead and kind of ruined the ending, not once, but twice, you know, because this is a movie that does have multiple endings. So that, I made this a point because there were some people who were like, I don't get it, that I saw in the reviews online. So if you're one of those people who watched this movie and just went, I don't get it, you'll get it now. It was her plan. It wasn't the Golem's plan. No, it wasn't Lizzie's plan. It was Aveline's. There are signs throughout the plot that are explained away by someone in the film. This is a bit convenient to the plot, which that does happen. This does, I think, reflect real life in the sense that it's messy and how vile, manipulative people get away with things. Now, I've known some very terrible, vile, nasty people who parade around as the sweet and innocent ones, who parade around as your best friends, and then as soon as you stop giving them exactly what they want, you're gone. You're done. You're out. You're over. You're through. And you are suddenly cast as this dark, evil, looming abuser that's been abusing this person for a while behind the scenes, or you're just making up lies out of jealousy, and you haven't even said anything to anyone, and then people are like, stop spreading lies. I haven't even said anything about this. You want me to ruin your life? Because I can. You made the mistake and opened your mouth. But life is messy. So, what are you going to do? Now, this may not be a thrilling or award-winning film, and may be easily lost among the rabble of the genres, but to me, it stands out as an homage to the whole of the popular Victorian fiction mystery genre. It's, like I said at the beginning of this, it's very much so one of those movies that just kind of stands out, and it's just kind of there. And it does service the whole, I need a movie to watch, I'm looking for something relaxing, I just want to put something on and be entertained for a bit. It'll do that. Is it, you know, like, super mega award worthy? No. Probably not. I mean, there's some really good acting, so maybe for, you know, the cast, but story or graphics, design, costuming was really on point, though, too. So, like, that was very authentic. So maybe for the costuming department, actors, I mean, they should get some recognition, but as far as the rest of it, I don't know. I think maybe the book might be a lot better. So, I'm definitely going to be looking into that one. Now, I did save this for last. There is a bit of trivia that went along with it, and I did double-check this one, and it is absolutely true. The Limehouse Golem is a film dedicated to the memory of Alan Rickman, as he was the original lead, but he left the project due to failing health after his diagnosis of cancer. That really got me, and I do honestly think that Limehouse would have really benefited from his inclusion and his contribution on the cast list. I think that he probably inspired the performance that we got from Bill Nye, and that's something right there. Bill still did his thing the way he was going to do it, but I think that they're, looking back on it, there were some things that were very Alan Rickman-esque that was nice to see come through in regards to the composition. Johan has put together for this film a score that, while it helps the film along, it's also quite a forgettable one. Nothing really stands out from scene to scene. There are some stings, but they don't really catch. Like, you can hear the beginning of Star Wars theme music and the Avengers theme and catch stings from those used elsewhere and know immediately what they are, and you can get that even from the last week's film with Avatar. It was there, but with this one, nothing. So I have to give the score a 1 out of 5. Because it did not stand out, nor... It just kind of feels like it was just a thing that he did. It wasn't impressive. And it was just kind of there. Overall for the film, it is... I give it a 3.4 out of 5. Because while it attempts to stand out and is a good film, I don't think that it leaned into its weirdness enough. I don't think that it did. It could have leaned into it a lot more, but it was good for what it was, and I did it, like I said, I did enjoy it, so that's why the 3.4. I had initially given it just a 3, and I was like, wait, that extra bit of camp there at the end was nice, so a little bit more, because it was the ending. The stuff that was holding it, that's holding the movie back, is just things that are unnecessary or that were better delved into in the book. Like, they had to decide what to cut. The editing department got with the director and was like, what do we do? And they just went through and hacked this poor movie up. And I would like to see a director's cut. I would like to see a copy of the book. And I just think that it would be a little more interesting to see, like, a limited Netflix series on this one. Or Hulu series or, you know, an Amazon Prime limited series of like 6 to 10 1 hour long episodes. Like, that would have been better. So if you agree with this, let me know. You can contact me on my website at robertreviews.home.blog, on Twitter at Robert_McPeak, on Instagram at Robert_McPeak1191, and on Facebook at Robert's Reviews Podcast. Now, if you disagree with this or you agree, let me know. Start discussing this with me. Let me know what you actually think of this, because if we can start dissecting some of these films and some of these movies and just have at, cool. But yeah, I will be around next week. I know that this was a little bit of a shorter episode. The Limehouse Golem, there wasn't a whole heck of a lot to get into with this one. It was a pretty straightforward film, one to the next, to the next, to the next. Kildare and the narrative and the plot didn't spend a whole heck of a lot of time going over and just hemming and hawing over clues. It was just one to the next. And you really saw how brilliant the guy was and how we as the audience were expected to keep up. It was entertaining and it filled almost 2 hours worth of time, and I did enjoy it. So, next time, I'm going to be looking into a couple more movies that are coming up on 10 and 20 year anniversaries for release, and I'm going to be looking over them. I'm thinking about doing The Mummy next week. I might do What Dreams May Come, because Robin Williams, 5 years gone, kind of a landmark. So I'm going to be doing one of those two next week. So until then, good night and good luck.